from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Let's go, indeed. It is time for a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. A happy Friday to you, despite the Cardinals' result today. A happy Friday to you nonetheless. We've got you for a full program. It is rare. It is rare that we have a show on a Friday night during the baseball season. But, of course, the Cubs have to be weird and play Friday afternoon home game. That's the ESPN did a 30 for 30 podcast. Oh, it's probably been 4 or 5 years since they did it, but they did it. It was really good, and it was all about Wrigley Field and the legalities of day games and putting in the lights and all that sort of stuff. I don't remember all the specifics, but it was very interesting, and I got into, because they used to have to play all day games, and the lights went in, and even when the lights went in, they were limited in the number of night games that they were allowed to have. And over the years, slowly but surely, there have been more and more night games. It's just odd to me that there's going to be one day of the week that you play a day game all the time in Chicago. Friday? I don't know. I get maybe that's a thing in Chicago that they like. Kyle Sixta is here. Kyle, you're from the Chicagoland area. I'm correct in saying that?
I am, yeah. I'm from Joliet.
Is that embrace the Friday afternoon games, or would people be just as fine if it was every Tuesday they had a day game?
I don't think it really matters okay. What day of the week.
It's just weird. They may be losing themselves a few dollars because you get a bigger crowd on Friday night, but there it is. So we've got a Gray Bar Sports Open Line tonight. Here's what's on the program today. By the way, I say that Kyle's from the Chicagoland area. It should be noted for the record that he is a diehard St. Louis Cardinals fan. And in fact, he made the wise choice to come to St. Louis to go to Lindenwood University, largely because of the St. Louis Cardinals. God bless Kyle Sixta. He partially made his collegiate choice to be closer to the baseball team that he loves. If that is not devotion to a team, I don't know what is. So just want to be very clear. When he may be from Chicago, but he is not of Chicago when it comes to any type of Cubs fandom. It just does not exist for Kyle. This is what we got coming up on the program tonight. In less than 10 minutes, Rob Raines is going to join us. You read him at stlsportspage.com covering the Cardinals. We'll get his thoughts on what's gone down these last couple days. I'm not a big believer in momentum, but you know what I am a big believer in? I'm a believer in vibes. And that's a word that's kind of come on more so in the last few years, the whole good vibes thing. 10 years ago, we weren't really talking about good vibes the way we talk about it now. The vibes are good, but I like it. It does matter. So I am a believer in vibes. I'm not so much a believer in momentum when it comes to baseball. But the vibes are good, man. The vibes were so good coming into the Chicago series. And then, boom, last night happens where Ryan Helsley was not very good for one of the first times this year. When you think about it, Kyle and I actually were talking about this earlier today. You think about the blown save yesterday for Helsley. He blew his first save opportunity of the year. And then he goes the 30 or whatever saves. And then he finally blows a save. But it comes in extra innings where you got the ghost runner over there at second base. So that barely even counts. So let's get rid of the extra inning blown save. To me, that feels like that's a tough way to have a save streak come to an end. That was truly Ryan Helsley's first blown save since his first opportunity of the year all the way back. Third overall, but again, you kind of get rid of the extra innings things. He's been so good. So just a weird, fluky sort of deal last night, just fluky in that Helsley was not especially good. And then today, vibes are still good. Eric Fetty is going to make his Cardinals debut. He was one of the big pickup pieces across all of Major League Baseball, one of the most sought-after pitchers for any team, and the Cardinals get him. And he's just not very good in the first two innings. He was able to work around it in the first, gave up a triple, nothing more, but then a five spot in the second inning, and that turns into his day because the Cardinals had a pretty tough offensive day where they go 0 for 7 with runners in scoring position. This is a game, by the way, that you would have just rather the Cubs won like 10-3. 6-3 hurts because the Cubs gave the Cardinals so many opportunities today. Three bases loaded walks, and the Cardinals leave the bases loaded on two separate occasions. So that's the gut punch to this one today. You lose this game 10-3, 12-3, you go, and everything else happens. It's a bummer. But this, even with Eric Fetty giving up the five runs in the second inning, the Cardinals could have easily won this game today. All they had to do was come up with one well-placed hit at the exact right moment, and it didn't happen. They were 0-7 with runners in scoring position. If you were listening during the post-game show on weekday day games, we always do the thing where we hold the calls and the text messages and the tweets for Sports Open Line as opposed to doing it during the extra inning show. So at about 6:35, 6:40, somewhere in there, we will open up the phone lines if you want to chime in, and we'll kind of do the that portion of the post-game just a couple hours after it happens. So I always try to provide that to you. I hear from people all the time that they want to be able to voice how they're feeling after Cardinals games. So we try to do that here on Sports Open Line on days that we don't do the full extended extra inning show. So that's going to be coming up here in just a little while. But up next, Rob Raines is set to join us. We'll get his thoughts on what's going on with the Cardinals here. These first two games losing against the Cubs, what to make of that, plus what to make of this team overall coming out of the trade deadline. That's up next. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
It's the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Goes mid swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Back at it here on KMOX. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line. We've got a full show tonight because the Cardinals, they have already played. They lost earlier today to the Cubs 6-3. That's after a walk-off loss yesterday. Those good vibes that they took into this Cubs series, they have seemingly dissipated. We'll see if they can win the next two to at least split the four-game series. We're very happy to be able to go to our guest line right now. You read this guy at stlsportspage.com. He is Rob Raines on Twitter at Rob Raines. Rob, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. How surprised are you? I'm not a believer in momentum, but I am kind of a believer that when things are going well, maybe you take that with you. It felt like everything was so good for the Cardinals going into the Chicago series, and then kind of a weird, fluky loss yesterday. Ryan Helsley's been so good this year, and he just had one of those weird letdowns that you have over 162 games. And then Eric Fetty had one bad inning today, and all of a sudden they've lost the first two games of this Cubs series.
Yeah, it was good going into the ninth inning yesterday. The first eight innings were fine. It was just the ninth inning that got away from him. Yeah, and that happens. You know, the interesting thing is that Helsley has struggled so much against the Cubs, and you just wonder why that is when he's been so successful against everybody else. And, you know, the three guys in particular that got him, you know, last night, Horner, Swanson, and Tauchman, just seem to have his number a little bit. And sometimes that happens, you know. So, and Fetty, you know, I mean, it was Earl Weaver, you know, 40, 50 years ago that said the momentum of baseball is the same thing as the next day's starting pitcher. So, you know, I think that he got past that one bad inning, you know, hung a couple balls that went out, which can happen in Wrigley very quickly. But yeah, you know, you go back, come back tomorrow, come back Sunday, and win those two games, and it's, you know, probably about what you hope to get out of that series anyway. So you still have a chance.
It's two bad innings. It's the second inning today and correct. The ninth inning yesterday.
That's correct. Yeah, but sometimes, you know, that's sometimes all it takes, though. You know, I mean, yeah, you could also look at the fact that how many opportunities the Cardinals had, especially today, to score runs that they didn't. You know, all three of their runs could, score on bases loaded, walks, and 0-7 with runners in scoring position, which we've talked about many times is, you know, one of the problems they've had all season. And except for the walks, they were 0-2 with the bases loaded, and they're next to last to the White Sox in batting average with the bases loaded this year. So, you know, you know, it's not all on the starting pitcher or not all on the relief pitchers. You know, sometimes the offense has to do their part. I mean, and those two games here, you know, before they went to Chicago, they had great offensive games. So it's in there. You know, they can do it. It's just, I think that one of the things that has bugged this team the whole season has just been the consistency that sometimes they get hot hits and sometimes they don't.
Who are they then? Because at some at some point, you become who you are. Maybe that point is when you miss the playoffs, or maybe that point is when you get knocked out of the playoffs, or maybe that point is when you go on a playoff run. Who is this team?
Right now, their team is like three games over 500, and that's kind of where they but you know, win two, lose two. I mean, that's just kind of what they've been doing. They were 13-12 in July. I mean, it's just, you know, you kind of hope that those deals that they made at the deadline would give them a little boost, and maybe it did, you know, temporarily, and they could still give them a boost, you know, again. I mean, going to Wrigley, you know, the Cubs-Cardinals series in Chicago, it doesn't matter what the records are. It doesn't matter what the standings are. Those are always going to be intense, tough games, and it's just, you know, sometimes it's just the difference between getting one hit or not getting a hit that makes a difference in those games. So, you know, you just have to turn the page and come back and try again tomorrow. That's all you can do.
Going back to the deadline and the big trade, because they get Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham, and they get him essentially for Tommy Edman and a really low-level pitcher who might never even step foot into the United States of America, a young guy who's pitching for the Dominican team right now in the organization. Were you impressed with what John Mozeliak, the lack of what he had to give up to get those two guys?
Yeah, I think the trades turned out well. I mean, if you had told me going into the trading deadline that you could get, you know, Fetty and Pham and not have to give up, you know, more than Edmund and Carlson, I would have said that was a great, great trade. You know, I can't believe the White Sox really didn't ask for another, you know, at least decent level prospect. I would have thought somebody in the Herrera-Graceffo category would have probably had to been in that deal, you know, if I'm the White Sox. So, yeah, not that you're going to trade, you know, any of your top, you know, five prospects to do that, but I think you would have included one of those guys maybe a little bit farther down the line. So the fact that they didn't have to give that up, the fact that Fetty is signed for next year is also a big plus. He wasn't just a rental. When you look at some of the prices that like Houston potentially paid for Kikuchi just to be a rental for the rest of the season, you know, and you weigh that against what the Cardinals gave up. And I'm obviously a big Tommy Edman fan. I'm a big Dylan Carlson fan. But you know, supported both those guys ever since they got here, and really think they both have the chance to be really good players. It just didn't, you know, work out. I mean, Edmund's, you know, situation this year, he was, you know, not here because he was recovering from surgery. So what have you really, you know, you're not really missing anything that you had this year by trading him. And unfortunately, Dylan's situation, the playing time has just diminished to next to nothing. And part of that, of course, is because of performance. But part of it's also because he just didn't really get a chance to play. You know, you never know what would have happened this year had he not gotten hurt in that day before the end of spring training, because he had such a good spring and won the starting center fielder job. And he thought maybe he was finally back on his way to living up the potential he had, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So I think the best thing for him was to move on, get on and get a fresh start somewhere else, and just get a chance to play and you know, hopefully let his talent come out. And he's still 25 years old. You know, a lot of times guys don't make their major league debut until they're 25 years old. So the fact he's got, you know, all the experience that he's got and been through everything he's got, I still think he's got a bright future. And unfortunately, I just don't think it was going to happen here. But to use those two assets to get, you know, two guys who hopefully will help you, you know, for the rest of this season more than the two guys that you traded, I think that's a plus.
It really is remarkable what has happened with this center field, just the arc of this storyline, because we get to spring training. You know, Tommy Edman's going to be ready for the season. Well, he's not ready for the season. Dylan Carlson's going to be the center fielder. Well, he gets injured. Victor Scott's going to be the center fielder. Well, he can't hit at the major league level. Oh, we're stuck with Michael Ciani, and now Ciani really has excelled.
Crazy how baseball works sometimes, huh? Right? Yeah. Yeah. You know, and don't forget that when the Cardinals signed Brandon Crawford, you know, Tommy Edman is ready to play, or you know, Dylan Carlson doesn't get hurt, I'm not sure Alec Burleson makes the team.
Yeah.
You know, and he's been, you know, probably arguably almost their best offensive player the whole season. So that's just the way that baseball works. And it's a credit to those guys that they took advantage of the opportunity, you know, that the opening was there and they seized it and, you know, done really well. And I think have even, you know, I know they've exceeded expectations from what the Cardinals expected them to do, and I think they've cemented themselves as guys going forward. I mean, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next year at first base if, you know, Paul Goldschmidt leaves as a free agent and not re-signed, but I could bet you that if Paul Goldschmidt is not here and first base is open, first guy I'd take a long look at is Alec Burleson, you know, my first baseman. So
the Cardinals right now, 6 games back of the Brewers. If the Brewers win tonight, they're 6.5. If the Pirates win tonight, they are behind the Pirates, and they'd be in third place in the division from a wild card standpoint. The Cardinals are now 2.5 games out of a playoff spot, and they may need to jump over the Pirates. They'll need to jump over the Mets to catch the Diamondbacks, Padres, or Braves. A little bit more than 50 games left in the season. It's fair to say that they got to get going now, that there's not really a lot of time to kind of futz around with this, that they got to start winning games.
Now, once you hit August, I think it's a sprint to the finish. You know, I mean, you say 52 games or whatever it is to go, that's a lot of games. Yeah, but it's going to happen really quick. you know, you're going to get through August pretty quick, and then you're into September, and you know how important that is. So it's, you know, they got, what, 6 head-to-head games left with Milwaukee. They've got, you know, some other games against the teams that are ahead of them. The game against the Mets here on Monday. They've got 4 games against San Diego here at the end of August. So they've got some games against some of the teams that they're competing against. But, yeah, it's, you know, I don't want to say every game is a must-win, but they certainly got to get to, you know, win more games than they lose here if they want to try and stay in this race. Because you got to think, and you know, it's one thing when you're just trying to chase one team, like they're trying to track down Milwaukee for the division title, but you know, they're basically chasing 5 other teams in the wild card race, and chances are, aren't all 5 of those are not going to lose every night. You know, some of those teams are going to win.
I'm not trying to go all fuzzy math on you here, but they play one game against the Mets, and in many ways, that's kind of equivalent to playing 3 games, because you want to go into a series and you want to win 2 out of 3, and if you win 2 out of 3 against somebody, you gain 1 game in the standings. Well, if they come in and win 1 game, they pick up 1 game in the standings. This game on Monday is a big deal.
It is, yeah, it is. And, you know, you kind of didn't realize that at the time it got rained out back in May or whenever it was, that there was going to be right, thrown right in the middle of all this other stuff going on. Math is not my strong suit. You know, I have calculators and stuff on the computer to figure that out, but I can't tell you that's an important game. You're right.
Absolutely. Rob Raines, he covers the Cardinals. You read him at stlsportspage.com. You follow him on Twitter at Rob Raines. Rob, always appreciate you taking some time with us. We'll see you at the ballpark this week.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Rob Raines joining us here on the program, and we appreciate him taking a few moments with us. All right. If you want to get in here, this is the point where we give you an opportunity to chime in on what the Cardinals did today, how you're feeling about them right now, what we normally do on the Extra Inning Show, we do on Sports Open Line on weekday day games. You can call, you can text, you can tweet. If you call or text, the phone number is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. If you tweet at me, it's at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. We've got more coming up in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
There's a ground ball fielded by Bush. Underhanding Daenerys, this ballgame has come to an end. 6-3 Cubs.
Yeah, tough one today for the Cardinals. They end up losing to the Cubs by that 6-3 score. Welcome back in. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. This is the part of the program where we give you an opportunity to chime in on what's going on with the Cardinals. So if you want to call, text, or tweet, we are here for you. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text, or you tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air. Let's grab our first phone call. John has given us a call. Hey, John, you are on Sports Open Line.
All right. Hey, I couldn't believe we sent up Crawford when we had Nolan Gorman sitting on the bench today in the 8th inning.
Yeah.
All it takes is a, swing with the wind blowing out. And, you know, I've questioned Ollie time and time again. And all I can say is what drives me crazy is all the different lineups. We've got such a unique group of guys. We can play this position, that position, hit this order, hit that order. I'm telling you, that may be today's manager, but that's not the way I've watched baseball. So,
hi, John. Success. Appreciate the phone call. So I agree with part of what you said, and I disagree with another part of what you said. I didn't like the move to pinch hit Brandon Crawford there. I didn't. Now, the reason for it, I always say this about Oliver Marmol. He always has a good reason for everything that he does. And there was a good reason to go with Brandon Crawford today. Just because there's a good reason doesn't mean I agree with it. This is one of those times where I would not have, if I would have been managing that game, I would not have gone with Brandon Crawford in that situation. The good reason behind it, though, is Crawford is 5-for-7 against Hector Neris in his career. So a guy who's had a lot of success against him, 5-for-7, that's the reasoning behind it. So I don't think that's a bad – I don't get on Oliver Marmol about that decision because of the reasoning behind it. I think that is very valid reasoning. Now, our good friend Brendan Schaefer, who you can read at KMOV.com, covers the Cardinals for Channel 4, he tweeted this out. So this is his data that he researched, just to give credit where credit is due. but I think it is important and notable and part of the reason why I disagree with the decision to go with Brandon Crawford in that spot. I read from Brendan's tweet. The last time Crawford faced Hector Neris prior to this afternoon was in 2019, and he struck out in that at bat. So that's 3 years ago. The last time Crawford got a hit against Neris was in 2018, so even further back. So he's 5-for-7 against Neris in his career, but doesn't have a hit against him since 2018. At what point does success against a pitcher still like impact? If he's 5-for-7 against Hector Neris this year, then yeah, I think the decision makes a whole lot of sense. 5-for-7 in the career when you don't have a hit against him since 2018. I think I said 3 years earlier when I said 2019. That's 5 years, but you get what the point of what I'm saying. I just can't do basic math. So I don't think the 5-for-7 means so much when it's been so long since you faced him. That much time, Neris is a little bit of a different guy. Crawford's a little bit of a different guy. Now, the Gorman thing, you're right. Gorman can pop one in that situation, and you have the lead. If I'm managing in that situation, I'm letting Ciani hit for himself. Ciani's a hot hand guy. You've got the tying run on in second at that spot, so you get a base hit. You've probably tied the game up. I'm not going to a pinch hitter. I'm not. I am just going to go ahead and let Ciani hit for himself in that situation. And, I mean, Ciani's, with his hit today, Ciani's 1-for-2 today. He's now a 260 hitter. He's, 12-game hitting streak that he's on now? So I would have gone with Ciani in that spot. So that's one of the, again, Oliver Marmol has a, we can sit here and say, yes, we disagree with something he did, but also acknowledge the fact that there was good reasoning behind the decision. I think this is one of those things. Marmol very much prioritized the Crawford's 5-for-7 against Neris. That's not what I would have prioritized in that situation. I would have prioritized the current hot hand, and I'm much more comfortable with a Michael Ciani coming up in that spot. I wouldn't have loved Gorman in that spot, to be perfectly honest with you. I would have taken Ciani over Gorman. So here's the question. If somebody would have presented me with the 5-for-7 data, knowing what Brendan Schaefer tweeted out about how long it's been, and compare that to the idea of Nolan Gorman, would I rather it be Gorman or Crawford in that spot? Eesh. I don't know. But whoever's in second or third, Ciani would have been my decision in that moment, absolutely for sure. A tweet coming in from Bald Eagle says, 1-for-13 with runners in scoring position and 17 left on base over the last two games. The offense is back to its normal self after two games, which were an aberration. Offense is going to be the reason they missed the playoffs. I still believe in this team offense. Am I crazy? Am I crazy that I still believe in this team offensively? Now, the narrative that has existed all season long continues to exist, that you have to get more production from your middle of the order guys and Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. Goldschmidt's been turning it around a little bit. We'll see if that sticks around or if that's just a short-term sort of deal. I don't know if what they did against the Rangers was an aberration, but to the point of the tweeter, yeah, like this is when this team loses games, they don't hit with runners in scoring position. But you know what? That's true about a lot of teams in baseball. If you don't hit with runners in scoring position.
There's a ground ball fielded by Bush. Underhanding Daenerys, this ballgame has come to an end. 6-3 Cubs.
Yeah, tough one today for the Cardinals. They end up losing to the Cubs by that 6-3 score. Welcome back in. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. This is the part of the program where we give you an opportunity to chime in on what's going on with the Cardinals. So if you want to call, text, or tweet, we are here for you. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text, or you tweet at me at Matt Pauly on air. Let's grab our first phone call. John has given us a call. Hey, John, you are on Sports Open Line.
All right. Hey, I couldn't believe we sent up Crawford when we had Nolan Gorman sitting on the bench today in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
All it takes is a swing with the wind blowing out. And, you know, I've questioned Ollie time and time again. And all I can say is what drives me crazy is all the different lineups. We've got such a unique group of guys. We can play this position, that position, hit this order, hit that order. I'm telling you, that may be today's manager, but that's not the way I've watched baseball. So,
all right, John, appreciate the phone call. So I agree with part of what you said, and I disagree with another part of what you said. I didn't like the move to pinch hit Brandon Crawford there. I didn't. Now, the reason for it, I always say this about Oliver Marmol. He always has a good reason for everything that he does. And there was a good reason to go with Brandon Crawford today. Just because there's a good reason doesn't mean I agree with it. This is one of those times where I would not have, if I would have been managing that game, I would not have gone with Brandon Crawford in that situation. The good reason behind it, though, is Crawford is 5-for-7 against Hector Neris in his career. So a guy who's had a lot of success against him, 5-for-7, that's the reasoning behind it. So I don't think that's a bad – I don't get on Oliver Marmol about that decision because of the reasoning behind it. I think that is very valid reasoning. Now, our good friend Brendan Schaefer, who you can read at KMOV.com, covers the Cardinals for Channel 4, he tweeted this out. So this is his data that he researched, just to give credit where credit is due. But I think it is important and notable and part of the reason why I disagree with the decision to go with Brandon Crawford in that spot. I read from Brendan's tweet. The last time Crawford faced Hector Neris prior to this afternoon was in 2019, and he struck out in that at-bat. So that's 3 years ago. The last time Crawford got a hit against Neris was in 2018, so even further back. So he's 5-for-7 against Neris in his career, but doesn't have a hit against him since 2018. At what point does success against a pitcher still like impact? If he's 5-for-7 against Hector Neris this year, then yeah, I think the decision makes a whole lot of sense. 5-for-7 in the career when you don't have a hit against him since 2018. I think I said 3 years earlier when I said 2019. That's 5 years, but you get what the point of what I'm saying. I just can't do basic math. So I don't think that. I don't think the 5-for-7 means so much when it's been so long since you faced him. That much time, Neris is a little bit of a different guy. Crawford's a little bit of a different guy. Now, the Gorman thing, you're right. Gorman can pop one in that situation, and you have the lead. If I'm managing in that situation, I'm letting Ciani hit for himself. Ciani's a hot-hand guy. You've got the tying run on in second at that spot, so you get a base hit. You've probably tied the game up. I'm not going to a pinch hitter. I'm not. I am just going to go ahead and let Ciani hit for himself in that situation. And, I mean, Ciani's with his hit today, Ciani's 1-for-2 today. He's now a .260 hitter. He's, 12-game hitting streak that he's on now? So I would have gone with Ciani in that spot. So that's one of the – again, Oliver Marmol has a – we can sit here and say – yes, we disagree with something he did, but also acknowledge the fact that there was good reasoning behind the decision. I think this is one of those things. Marmol very much prioritized the Crawford's 5-for-7 against Neris. That's not what I would have prioritized in that situation. I would have prioritized the current hot hand, and I'm much more comfortable with a Michael Ciani coming up in that spot. I wouldn't have loved Gorman in that spot, to be perfectly honest with you. I would have taken Ciani over Gorman. So here's the question. If somebody would have presented me with the 5-for-7 data, knowing what Brendan Schaefer tweeted out about how long it's been, and compare that to the idea of Nolan Gorman, would I rather it be Gorman or Crawford in that spot? I don't know. But whoever's in second or third, Ciani would have been my decision in that moment, absolutely for sure. A tweet coming in from Bald Eagle says, 1-for-13 with runners in scoring position and 17 left on base over the last two games. The offense is back to its normal self after two games, which were an aberration. Offense is going to be the reason they missed the playoffs. I still believe in this team offense. Am I crazy? Am I crazy that I still believe in this team offensively? Now, the narrative that has existed all season long continues to exist, that you have to get more production from your middle of the order guys and Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. Goldschmidt's been turning it around a little bit. We'll see if that sticks around or if that's just a short-term sort of deal. I don't know if what they did against the Rangers was an aberration, but to the point of the tweeter, yeah, like this is when this team loses games, they don't hit with runners in scoring position. But you know what? That's true about a lot of teams in baseball. If you don't hit with runners in scoring position, you probably don't score a lot of runs. If you don't score a lot of runs, you probably don't win a lot of games. So, yeah, if we went and did the – this would be interesting. I don't even know how to put together this data. But if you went and did the aggregate numbers on every team winning games, what they do with runners in scoring position, and take that, you know, for all 30 teams, for every single game that they won, the overall numbers with runners in scoring position, and then you take every team and every game that they lost and put those good numbers together on what they hit with runners in scoring position, that number is going to be as far off as possible. Like this is basic stuff. If you don't score runs, you don't win games. So it happens too often with the Cardinals. Cardinals are one of the worst teams in baseball hitting with runners in scoring position. I'm not trying to be dismissive of that, but at the same time, we talk about it so often when they lose games that they struggle with runners in scoring position. And my contention is a lot of teams are struggling with runners in scoring position when they lose games. That's just the nature of baseball. And not always. Sometimes you lose games where each team is scoring a bunch of runs. That doesn't really happen a whole lot with the Cardinals, but it does happen. So the overall numbers, though, are not good. Another tweet comes in. I don't like this tweet, but I'll read it. A pitcher we got from one of the worst teams ever in baseball sucked. Who'd have thunk it? That's a terrible tweet. You know what? A position player that the Cardinals got from one of the worst teams in baseball had 6 RBIs in the first 2 games. Who'd have thunk it? Where a guy comes from doesn't matter. Paul Blackburn's going to pitch for the Mets tonight. He came from a terrible team in Oakland. Let's see what he does. Players, good players on bad teams get moved all the time, and they go play well. Eric Fetty had a bad start today. And when I say bad start, I mean like literally the start to his performance was not good. The first inning wasn't good. The second inning wasn't good. Don't know if it was nerves. Don't know what it was. He settled in. He lost the game. His total line doesn't look good because it's 5 runs and 5 innings. He retired 10 in a row after giving up that 5th run in the second inning. He locked in after that. He was a bright spot for the White Sox. It's just to sit here and try to associate that a guy is coming from a bad team, so he's going to be a bad player, that is flawed thinking, and it's not correct, and I would certainly stay away from that. Text message from the 573 says, why does Arenado struggle with runners in scoring position? It seems he tries to do too much in those situations. Earlier this year, he was actually one of the best Cardinals hitters when it came to runners in scoring position. Let me go look at his. I haven't looked at these numbers in a really, really long time. So let's see. Runners in scoring position and 2 outs. Nolan Arenado's hitting .289. with a .702 OPS. Those aren't all-star numbers, but they're not bad. With runners on, Nolan Arenado's hitting .271. Now, he's got a good number of strikeouts. His on-base is not great in those situations. But, yeah, he doesn't perform well with the bases loaded. He does not have a hit this year with the bases loaded. He is 0-for-6. With 2 strikeouts with the bases loaded, so maybe that's part of what's going on here because those are really big moments. But yeah, runners in scoring position, 2 outs. He's a .289 hitter. Runners on, .271 hitter. So he does not struggle as much with runners in scoring position as I think you believe he does. Text message from the 618. Eric Fetty had a hard start, but the Cardinals left the bases loaded at 2. Tomorrow is another day. I have faith in this team. Text message from the 618. Why don't they drop Goldschmidt back down to 7th and leave him alone? I don't have a problem with that. And it kind of depends on, you know, are you facing a righty? Are you facing a lefty? What else is going on? But they they still absolutely believe in Paul Goldschmidt as being a run producer. And I think part of, he bat, what, he was in the fourth spot today? Yeah, he was in the fourth spot today. Goldschmidt's really been swinging it the last few days, and it's been good to see. I think I went over his numbers yesterday, like over his last 10 games, and the numbers are fantastic over that period. Clearly, it is a tiny sample size. So yeah, if they want to move him back down again in the lineup, I'm not going to be overly upset about that. Who they have on this team, the way they can construct lineups, no issue. And by the way, going back to our caller earlier, I never even got to it. The whole line, first off, the Cardinals do not mix and match like players with playing positions as much this year as they did last year. That was one thing that they wanted to go to this year, having more of a set group in the field. A guy like Brendan Donovan can play all over, but they have been much more consistent this year. When you think about it, Michael Ciani is always in center field. Paul Goldschmidt's always at first. Mason Wynn is always at shortstop. Nolan Arenado is always at third. They have been more. There's been more of a concerted effort. If Nolan Gorman would be hitting, he'd always be at second, except for some DH days where Donovan would go in there. There's been more of a concerted effort on getting guys into a more secure role. I don't have a problem with the lineup changing one day to the next. I don't think it really impacts things. I don't think having this steady lineup where a guy walks into the ballpark and has to know exactly where he's hitting, that really matters all that much. All right, we'll take one more break. We'll come back and we will wrap up the first hour of the program. A couple guests coming up in the second hour. We'll keep the Cardinals talk coming up as well. Don't go anywhere. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Live. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
About a minute left here in hour number one of the program. During the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to get a couple guests on the show. Nate Gatter is going to join us, friend of the program. He'll be with us coming up at 7:20. We'll talk a little bit of City SC soccer with him. Tim Parker on the move, the guy who scored the first ever goal in the history of the franchise and has been just a great member of that team. Well, he is being traded reportedly. We'll get Nate's thoughts on that. We'll talk a little college football with Nate as well for a very good reason, and we'll get to that when Nate joins us. And then also next hour, this will be fun, Randy Cox is going to join us. You probably don't know that name. He is an author who wrote a book about Hank Aaron, so we're going to talk a little bit about the life of Hank Aaron and some big moments for him. So I think baseball fans will enjoy the conversation with Randy Cox coming up at about 7:35. Again, no Cardinals baseball tonight because they already played today. Unfortunately for the Cardinals, they end up losing to the Cubs by a 6-3 score, and now they have to win these next 2 days if they want to find a way to split the four-game series against the Cubs at Wrigley Field in Chicago. And don't forget that Monday game against the Mets. If you got a pocket schedule, it's not on there because that is a rescheduled game. So if you're looking for something to do on Monday, there's probably tickets available. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news right here on KMOX. On KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
About a minute left here in hour number one of the program. During the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to get a couple guests on the show. Nate Gatter is going to join us, friend of the program. He'll be with us coming up at 7:20. We'll talk a little bit of City SC soccer with him. Tim Parker on the move, the guy who scored the first ever goal in the history of the franchise and has been just a great member of that team. Well, he is being traded reportedly. We'll get Nate's thoughts on that. We'll talk a little college football with Nate as well for a very good reason, and we'll get to that when Nate joins us. And then also next hour, this will be fun, Randy Cox is going to join us. You probably don't know that name. He is an author who wrote a book about Hank Aaron, so we're going to talk a little bit about the life of Hank Aaron and some big moments for him. So I think baseball fans will enjoy the conversation with Randy Cox coming up at about 7:35. Again, no Cardinals baseball tonight because they already played today. Unfortunately for the Cardinals, they end up losing to the Cubs by a 6-3 score, and now they have to win these next 2 days if they want to find a way to split the four-game series against the Cubs at Wrigley Field in Chicago. And don't forget that Monday game against the Mets. If you got a pocket schedule, it's not on there because that is a rescheduled game. So if you're looking for something to do on Monday, there's probably tickets available. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news right here on KMOX.